Welcome to The Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. My name is Lucy.
This is Spencer.
This is a podcast where we talk about, what do we talk about, Spencer?
We talk about childhood education, childhood development, areas of childhood that we feel passionate about, and the ways in which we can help others share those passions.
Perfect. I love it.
Thank you. Today, speaking of things that we are passionate about, I wanted to talk about a superpower in the early literacy and art world of education. And that is the power of the black line. Ooh. I feel like that'd be a really cool superhero. Imagine it. Their power is black
line. The black line.
Ooh, I gotta go illustrate this.
It'd be a little bit like Harold and the Purple Crayon.
I'm actually going to talk about that book at the end of this. After talking about children's books, I'm going to jump a literacy step because I want to make this cognizant line, this mental connection to adults as to why I'm talking about something as silly as the black line. So I encourage all adult listeners, which I think are most of our listeners on this podcast, to consider all the times that you have done the essay process in high school, college, or other higher forms of education, where they had you break down your writing into a step-by-step process, sometimes with peer reviews, edits, but usually with deadlines that broke down your work into parts of the essay that you would finish in order to structure that final paper. So now let's take that analogy of how we would have to break down our writing, and let's consider the act of drawing our images beforehand as exacting that same purpose with our young children. We are having them take what could be a quickly formatted product and having them slow it down so that they're really putting more consistent and better effort into their drawings. The black line is a tool that forces our children, and I don't love that term force, but it is the correct term. It forces them to slow down that art process, add steps, rather than rushing that important journey to the final product. It's tedious, yes. I don't think anybody here loved the essay process in high school and college, but it is something that I think all of us share that experience because it was a really necessary part of our education. In the same way that encouraging children to include lines in their art is an important part of their education. These steps allow you your ways, your means to be better developed and in turn produce a higher quality product.
Yeah, I'm going to be just sitting and listening.
I just hope this isn't too technical. I'm not boring people because I feel like the finger one was very technical too. I just get really into the technicalities.
I'm enthralled. So if nobody else enjoys it, I do. But no, because you did an in-service on this a while ago, and it was so mind-blowing to me. Because when you can understand the why behind things, it's just, I don't know, it's just so fun to actually learn this new thing and have it shape what you do. And I guess I should let you get into it more, but I feel like this is not a huge giant change. This is not even something that you have to really practice all that much. It's just like, it's this, let's start using this because this is important to use.
It's very important. And it's also fun because we can consider this as adults. I feel like we already as adults take that time to make the black outline, but we don't think about that. We don't think about the fact that we find it so important to outline things before we do something. Think about how often we've done things in pencil first and then go over it. Kids don't think like that. It's not the same process. But it's funny you say that. I cannot remember what term we used in college. I believe the term was something along the lines of forethinking thought process, but it's this idea of creating an exacting line. I found the black line, just specifically that simple term, was used by kindergarten teachers because that's how they teach a lot of their early dictation. They'll have children, and I've seen this time and time again at specifically the school that I work at with our kindergarten teacher. I like the process because it makes the children think. You could call it, and I'm going to get into this, you could call it cookie cutter or rigorous, but I think it's just a really streamlined form of creativity. She has the kids, she gives them a prompt. She'll say, you know, we went to the park. Can you please draw me a picture with a black pen of your favorite activity at the park? And then can you please write down a sentence of what that activity is? I played on the swings. I climbed a tree. Then after you have completed those two harder tasks using the same black pen, you are rewarded by being able to color in your picture, the easier side of it. And it was a great way because it was so simple. And I'm sure she knew what she was doing by translating the drawing with the black pen and you making them use that utensil creatively and then using that same utensil to write the dictation of their activity. She was merging the drawing format in the literacy format in the most conducive and beautiful way. It was perfect. She knew exactly what she was doing. And so my cheesy line here, the bottom line is that line is a very valuable tool in early drawing and literacy skills. It's the most natural segue, that dark black line. And of course, it doesn't need to be black. It can be blue. It can be dark purple. But the point being that it is a deep, dark color that is significant and bold against the rest of your page.
So I just haven't gone around to buying a black marker
yet. I was going to suggest some.
I've just given Leo a pen and I love it because it's a push pen. So like it's getting this motion and stuff too. And then he can have such good care over it where like the cap on it is really, he does a good job. Like when if I ever give him like dry erase markers and things like that, he always, you know, Leo, he insists on putting the marker or the lids back on each marker and stuff like that. But I figured the click one is easier to that he can care for it. Would it be better to do the marker? I want to say it would be because he is just using the pen still as just like he would use like a crayon.
Right. So I have, oh my God, I'm going to be going back and forth on this a little bit. If I had it my way, I would have children starting all of their black line work with a supervised black Sharpie. It leaves the darkest mark, the heaviest mark, and the most distinctive mark. But obviously, you cannot have that going wild on paper. That's going to stain clothes and walls.
And use up a lot of paper because it will seep through all the paper.
The next best thing is a good black marker. For adults, and I actually experimented with this. I was telling Lucy before recording this, I have a summer program with a group of three-year-olds, and we are doing sketchbook entries. And I gave them all an idealized like kit at the beginning of the summer. And boy, a lot of those items were quickly shown as being incorrect for the age of three, despite them being correct for a sketchbook study. One of which was, and I'd recommend this for adults and ages six and up, a felt tip pen with a micron pen specifically. It's the ones that have the perfect little point at the end of them, and they dispense ink through a tiny little felt dispenser. They create perfectly beautiful lines, but they snap easily under crazy pressure, which three-year-olds have a lot of undiluted pressure. So older people, felt pens, younger kids, markers, heavy black markers. I'm actually going to share with you one of my favorites, Tombows. They are these beautiful heavy ink pens, and they have this lovely soft curved tip that's very thick. So anybody, any age can use it. It doesn't break easily, but the amount of ink, the fine India ink that it dispenses for about $5 a pen, in my opinion, worth it. A Sharpie is only $3. So if you consider that, you know, back and forth, it's not that much more expensive. Talk about a great way to get some early line drawing and a beautiful line at that. So Tombow pens, that's what I use personally.
Okay. I'm also what I'm going to have you do when we post this episode. If anyone is not following on along on Instagram or Facebook, you should do that. That would be great because I would love to have you do a story and just show the different tools that you're talking about and maybe even do like a little video of how they draw differently. That would be cool. Okay. And we'll link the pens in the show notes.
So yeah, what I'm getting to with all of this is we want to give our children the ability to start this line work at a younger age, not only because it is appropriate for them to start those literacy skills, but it's getting them started towards age-appropriate acts of illustration, acts of drawing. at first, younger children will want to scribble. That is the most natural act of a child capable of holding a utensil and capable of recognizing their marks on paper. Children around 2 are at this quote-unquote scribbling age, and this lasts until about 4 years of age. We can help our young children break down this rushed, chaotic scribbling style by encouraging them to work in this step-by-step process by first creating their imagery with a black pen with a darker tip and then using any free-form color or material to finish up that art piece. Helping children accelerate their levels of drawing, the stages of drawing, by encouraging them to stay away from color all the time and trying to use line work more in their art. It's really just a nice way to help them break down what would be a chaotic style at their age. So the biggest emphasis we need to emphasize with children the difference between coloring and drawing. This is such a difference. Coloring is the act of filling in an image with color, and drawing is the act of creating an image on paper. It's very different. And I've actually had many lessons this last few months where I've had the kids plot out their images, and I've given them that black pen first, and they start coloring in their image with the black pen, and I'll get a little cheeky with them. And I'm like, do you want that dress to be black? And they're like, no, I want it to be green. And I'm like, well, then why are you coloring it black? And they're like, no, but oh,
like, they're sad.
Like, this is your act of plotting out and describing with the lines. You're not adding color yet. You're creating the outline to turn into color eventually. It's really important that we characterize this difference to young children. It's a formal characterization as well as it is a very important characterization.
Interesting.
Best way to start understanding the black lines in children's art is addressing the stages of drawing.
Learning about this in school like blew my mind again, I guess. I don't know. Like, I just think this is such a good moment to stop and reflect, to really respect what children are doing, respecting the work of children. Because, you know, you see children scribbling on paper, and especially as a parent, I feel like as a teacher as well, you get frustrated when you put out a whole stack of papers and it's instantly scribbled all the way through.
You're killing the trees.
Yeah. Like, oh my gosh, there was so many pieces of paper. Are you kidding me? But to stop and be able to respect what they're doing, understanding the breakdown of their different drawings. And even there's somebody else, and I don't remember her, I think it was a her, that she like takes all the different scribbles and breaks them down and categorizes what each scribble symbol is, like, and when they show up and stuff like that. And like, I don't know, I just love stopping and looking at what is happening at a smaller level. Are you going to use it in everyday life? Probably not, but it invokes that respect for children and what they're doing when respect. You understand this is not, yeah, it's, they're not just ruining all of these pieces of paper. There's different concepts that are coming, like it's reflecting their development. It is growing as they're growing. Yeah. So I'm just really excited to
No, I totally agree. I mean, this, so I'm going to mention the guy that developed the steps for the developmental steps of illustration of drawing, in which is Victor Lowenfeld. He essentially wrote the books on art education. He was a post-war educator. Are you aware of his work? Are you familiar with him?
Yeah, a little bit. Again, I'm sure we did not study him very extensively compared to what you did in school, but like I had one class where we covered him just a little bit.
Yeah, he's fun. He's really an interesting guy. He pioneered modern art education.
And maybe I shouldn't say anything at all because I might embarrass myself, but didn't he like collect art from like hundreds of children, like hundreds and hundreds of children, and like kind of start seeing the patterns and categorizing them and like he broke them down by like the age.
Yes. And that was his greatest achievement, was that he developed the most influential textbook in art education, which helps many teachers prep their programs because it describes the characteristics of child art based on where they should be at a certain age. And he has scientifically categorized these ages. It's not speculative. It's understood to be correct. And it's really funny because we will be linking the National Pediatric Health Association has an article, a whole page dedicated to watching out for steps of where your child should technically be. And I didn't want to get into this too much because this is more in terms of drawing, not in terms of line work. But they address if you have any concerns about what your child is drawing, as in not just where they should be, but what the context of what they are drawing.
Can I tell you a story?
No, please, please go.
I love my little brother. He is just a great human being. And he just, but he, I can't remember what grade he was in. It had to be like second. Any teacher that actually teaches this in their grade will know it immediately. But like young-ish, it's when they were talking about superlatives. They introduced this concept of like good, better, best, big, bigger, biggest, you know, and they had to like choose one of these words and draw a picture illustrating it. And my parents were called into a conference.
Oh, God.
To discuss Leland's art. And I'm not even going to make it through the story. Because he had chosen evil, eviler, and evilest.
Oh, God.
And evilest was a picture of him.
You need to keep this in. This is great.
Everyone else is going to freak out. Like, what a weird. He's a weird kid. But he is so great. Such a. But it was a picture of him with two ray guns on a hang glider and like shooting everyone with his ray gun. And that was the evilest.
Sounds pretty creative to me.
My parents were called in for an interview with him. And yeah, they were, that's kind of their reaction of like, well, he fulfilled the assignment and he's acknowledging that that would be evil. He's not saying that this is a really good thing, but he's acknowledging that that's not good.
That's my thing is like everything in life is on a scale, right? Like if he's pretty well balanced otherwise, then heck, how old was he out of curiosity?
I don't remember exactly. I think in first or second
I was reading. So again, I wanted to go into this more, but I was really trying to stick with line as a theme in the drawing part of this. Okay, please tell me you've been here. There is a study done that 90% of teenagers that have an invested interest in the arts go through a gothic gore horror phase in their art because it is a natural stepping stone in your emotional development to have a little bit of this wondering, darker sense of your art form. And that it, oh my goodness, it was so funny. They were like, this is,
I didn't know that, but that makes
they're sense. Like, this is perfectly like, normal. Your child is fine. Like, please do not be alarmed. And I find that right. So I went through that phase for sure. I think I was drawing like evil fairies and like dying cartoon characters, something like that. It was just, this got a little dark, but like it's, that was just kind of the phase. And it's all, just like we've talked about in many other subjects on this podcast, everything is situational. There was kind of a very sad, anyone can find this by looking this up. If you go to these pages on steps of development, there was this one woman and she was a babysitter and she was asking for assistance and help in analyzing her students, her ward's drawings because he was going through a divorce. His parents were going through a divorce. She was one of three nannies taking care of this child. And she expressed that he was becoming more physically violent. He was only four. And his drawings were representational and displaying images of red houses and families far, far from the house. So nothing too symbolic, but it also read, again, I'd like to look into this more, that apparently red and green colored houses are a sign of negative emotions arising within your feelings towards a house. Now that seems a little too broad, but I thought that was interesting.
Yeah, it could be right. They also could have just colored the house red. Right.
Which, in my opinion, if you live near a brick house, again, situational, if you live near brick houses,
yeah.
Well...
Yeah, no, that's fascinating.
Speaking of all these strange subjects, Loewenfeld's developmental stages that he identified, and he says that these stages and drawings reflect, and this is only a few of these reflections, reflect social abilities, physical abilities, and emotional growth, okay? And these stages are scribbling. That's the one that's 2 to 4. And technically, I mean, of course, you could count younger children in, but let's be very frank. As much as I encourage drawing with kids as young as you're able to grasp the material, it's technically not drawing. And this is the stages of drawing until you are cognizantly aware of holding the material and creating marks on paper. So the first stage is scribbles. Second stage is pre-schematic. The third stage is schematic. And the fourth stage is dawning realism. Stage 5 and 6 is pseudo-realism in the period of decision/crisis. I think we've all been in a period of decision and crisis at some point in life, but I'm not going to talk too much about those last two stages because they just go out of the realm of early childhood education. And this podcast is more focused on early education.
Yeah. Well, and that's not our realm of expertise. So if we decided to, if anyone's interested in listening to that, let us know and we'll get somebody who is.
And have fun looking it up on your own time. Like, you know, what was your period of crisis? So I just want to go over the stages real quick. And this is simple answers and knowledge you can find on the National Pediatric Health site. You can find this on basically any site that addresses the stages of drawing. It's a very common factors, but scribbling stage. This begins around 2 years old and lasts until the child is about 4. Again, everything is relevant based on those factors I mentioned earlier, social, physical, emotional development, and whatnot. In some cases, it can begin as soon as child can hold a fat crayon and make marks on paper, which could be around 18 months. So like I mentioned, everything is relevant. And interestingly enough, because Lucy, I shared a video with you about this, 18 months is when they have found that recognition of self-awareness starts. So curious that those two go hand in hand. So speaking of self-awareness, the child is only interested in watching the color on the paper. And some children are more interested in actually the making of the mark itself. So you'll notice they will look away while they're scribbling, because they're more interested in that repetitive tap, tap, tap. Gosh, have I seen that many times, especially with painting. They're like, yay, I'm making it. I'm going up and down, left and right. And I'm like, good. Are you looking? And they're like, yeah, yeah. But
nope.
What results in the paper is accidental and often delights that child, even though it may be indistinguishable to adults. That's literally the definition of a scribble.
I just found the Rhoda Kellogg was the theorist that she broke down the scribbles. And like, I think there's like 80 different types of scribbles.
Yes. Oh, it's so interesting.
Yeah. I think there's like kind of a couple more basic ones and how they start. Yeah. We'll maybe link a picture of those. So then you can get your child's artwork and start analyzing it and see if they're doing these kind of marks, because it's just fascinating. Again, just going back to just this respect of it, that it's not just scribble. It's they're doing something and they're progressing.
Right, right. And the distinguishing language here is it's accidental, but it often delights the child.
So they do it again.
Right, right. Yeah. This is enjoyable to them. So I also find, and I recommend this also when engaging a child in drawing, introduce open-ended questions and inquiries regarding the image to encourage them to describe the imagery. So if they are of a vocalizing age, encourage them to identify points in the drawing, whether you are identifying what you perceive of the drawing or encourage them to explain to you what they have created. Because then you're also engaging with their image on a deeper level than just, that's nice.
Right. This is something that we focused in a lot while I was at school. And I think every educator and probably most parents have had that moment where you look at your child's artwork and you're like, that's a lovely bus. And they're like, that's a frog. And you're like, oh, yeah. I mean, I knew that, like, and it's awkward because like, and they'll feel sad because they're like, well, clearly I can't draw it correctly because you saw the wrong thing. Yeah. And it's just kind of a mess.
One of my favorite phrases that you can introduce is the I see phrases. I see this. What do you see? You know, like I could see how you see
that.
And I really enjoy it. I mean, it's a very creative interpretation. Or not just what you see as a whole, but what you see in the scribbles. Like I see in there, I see a circle and I see the nose of a dog. Like you can just keep diving deeper into the multi. I really enjoy I see phrases.
Yeah. Ooh, I like that. I generally use the tell me about, like just in general, like if they made a block tower, tell me about what you built or that sort of thing.
Right.
And like, tell me why you use these colors or things like that,
which yes.
I like as well. But I do like that I see, and so that it's okay that I have a different perspective maybe than you do. And that's okay. It's okay that I see that I look at it. It doesn't mean that you're bad at what you're doing. We're just seeing from different perspectives. I like introducing that.
Yes.
It's cool. Also helpful when they are younger and they don't have quite as many language skills to be able to go into, tell me why you use those colors. I don't know.
One of my favorite things, and this is getting away from the black line, but I like to emote colors. I'm like, oh, I love that angry red that you've put on there. Or like, I love that fire red. That's very bright, very bright. Or like, you know, I love that purple. What a great purple that is. Like, ooh. I love to emote them. It's just, it's, you that's know, it's adding those little mental links too, right? Like you're saying, you're not just going, yeah. Okay, I think that's yellow. You're going, yeah, it's sunshine yellow. You know, that's a lovely, lovely, sad blue. I hate that blue and sad go hand in hand, but unfortunately it is quite a quick mental link, right? yeah.
I mean, oh my gosh. That would be a fun episode one time. I don't know how relevant it would be, but
color theory.
Yeah. Talking about colors and different cultures using different colors to make.
Yeah. It's so interesting.
That probably doesn't fit in the niche of our podcast, but would be really cool.
I don't know. I feel like that kind of does because color theory is so important for young children developing those ideas. Personally, I love color theory. I'm always pushing with kids. Like the hardest one I actually have a hard time with is not emoting with color. Identifying shade actually a lot of 3 to 4s tend to start getting that warmth color tonage, like warm colors, cool colors, neutral colors. And I think that's really important just to address, you know, like blacks, whites, browns are neutrals. That's why they're not in a rainbow. And then you have the other colors. That's why blues can feel cold. And I don't know, you know, like it's interesting how that runs a gambit. Yeah. Anyways, sorry. Next stage is the pre-schematic stage, and I like the alternative name for it a little better, which is the pre-symbolic stage. I think that just explains it in a much easier stance, which is that this develops around the age of 4, and this depends on how children have been exposed culturally to many art experiences, because that really does directly affect the art that they create. But essentially, it's that they're no longer scribbling, they're starting to make pre-symbolic, pre-definitive images of what they perceive to be the world around them. So in this stage, they may start drawing people, and they might have faces, hands, toes, but they won't have bodies, you know, and they will have big smiles, but they're not going to have those details because it's just not developmentally at the point that they're at. Everything is what they are starting to grasp as imagery, but not quite as specific as you might have with older ages.
This just reminded me of in Parks and Rec, Ron Swanson is like, said it once and I'll say it again. Children are bad artists or something like that, which is hilarious. But I love exploring this and being like, well, it's not actually that they're bad artists. Like they are doing really good in that category that they are in. But they have to develop these different concepts.
They define it as, like, for example, when you see a child drawing an early, if you look very carefully, and I've seen this so many times, they're always really funny, I have to admit. The head is usually the first drawn image, A, because we have a lot of interaction with the head more than anything else, mouths, eyes. There is a term for it, but how we as humans constantly identify faces. I love that term. I like cars, constantly identifying a face in a car. Heads are the first objects drawn because they're most relatable, but also because they tend to look bigger than other parts of the body. Like we tend to identify them as bigger. So, and they see the heads is very important. So they're going to choose to identify that more in their illustrations.
Yeah. Well, and which is sometimes a very purposeful art choice, I guess,
right,
to make the important things bigger. You know what I'm talking about?
Yep.
And so it's funny that children are doing that naturally because those are the things that are important to them. That's what they're seeing.
But it's so interesting. And it's at this age too, where they are starting to draw these things that are important to them. and put weight into what they draw, put significance in, and hope that you are correctly identifying their imagery. But they still have not developed spatial relation in their drawings. And I think all of us can think about, I find these drawings to be so frustrating when it's like the sun and the sun is on the horizon, but then there's a cloud behind the sun or in front of the tree. But then the person is up in the air. They're not on the ground. Like they're all over the place. They don't have this cognizant idea yet of spatial relation. So everything's going to be everywhere. Everything's still at a whim of their fancy, except that they're starting to make things a little more representational. This is the pre-schematic, the pre-symbolic. They do not yet know how to express three-dimensionality. Everything is still very 2D and simple. Actually, I can relate this to a recent class. I'm not going to get into the details of why they're doing this, but I have a fours, fives class currently working on pet portraits for a mural that we're making. And it's really funny because they're not that different in age, but you can tell who's five and who's four because the four-year-olds, we had them draw out the pets in black Sharpie before they painted anything. And everybody got that pretty well. And then we had them use acrylic paint to make the background of the animal. So they had to paint around what they had drawn in clear black Sharpie. Boy, oh boy, the four-year-olds, they didn't care. Paint was going all over those animals. There was no outline. What animal? What are you talking about? There was nothing there. You told me to paint a background. Here it is. And that's what we had to also draw out their designs on the side so they knew what they were doing. Because boy, they did not know what I was talking about later when I was like, hey, what happened to that dog? And they're like, what dog? That's my background right there. That's my painting. And I'm like, oh, you skipped that valuable step. Oh my gosh. But then you got the late fours, the five-year-olds, perfectly outlining their animal. Perfectly showing where their animal is in space. Their animal isn't floating in the middle unless I asked them if they wanted to do that. Their animal is centered on the ground. Their animal is placed very specifically. That 6 months makes a huge difference.
How cool is that? Oh my gosh, that's so cool that you could see that so clearly.
That's such an interesting age, right? Like it's...
Mm-hmm.
Oh, so another interesting thing about pre-schematic is colors are still on whim. They're not yet relating. Favorite colors is a whole different subject, but they're not yet relating to the subject. They're just whatever fancies the child. Literally, this exact class I'm talking about, one of the three-year-olds had painted her background in a deep, deep black, which takes a long time to dry. And she was doing a butterfly as her pet. Boy, oh boy, she finished that black background, deep black. You can't see anything. I said, where's your butterfly going? She goes, I'm supposed to put a butterfly? And I said, yes. What colors do you want to use? I said, you don't have to. She goes, no, I'm going to make a butterfly. She goes, give me a rainbow of colors. And I was like, okay. So I gave her all these colors and she's like, just started splattering them all over. And she's like, there. That's my butterfly. And it was just really funny because again, well, gosh, this really speaks to the power of the black line. When we had her draw out her butterfly design in the previous class, she was so careful and had actually specifically selected exactly which color she wanted for that butterfly. But man, when it came for paint to paper, she did not care anymore. It was like, let's go. Let's get it done.
Ah.
Really, really interesting. So now that it was not a long step process, she was like, I want it done. Oh, so it was almost lunchtime. So maybe she was hungry too. Like, you know, there's lots of factors.
Well, I can relate to
right?
that.
Right? Like... Food comes first.
That's so funny. Oh, I love her. I miss her.
So we talked about the pre-schematic and I'm about to make a big age jump here, but the schematic stage, the next stage doesn't typically start until around 7. So this pre-schematic like conceptual design style will go from 4 to 7, which is really interesting.
Quick question is like when you see just the strip of blue on just the top of the page.
That's pre-schematic.
Is that pre-schematic?
Yep. Because that's still struggling to identify placement.
Right.
And so that's the thing is that the concept of place will better develop as you go on. And that's why we're seeing the five-year-olds have a better idea of where placement is. They're better understanding spatial awareness. But I mean, concept is something that adults still struggle with. Conceptual space is where do things exist in space and in drawing. And so even into later ages, and I'm trying to think of direct examples with the older elementary school ages I've worked with, you will see locational placement is still a struggle in every aspect of the world. And that's why you see a lot of kids adding into portraits identifying background matter such as windows and doors, because it better solidifies their place spatially. And a lot of kids that have a grasping concept of early art have this interest in adding that spatial focus because they would like to ground their imagery a little more. And I wanted to show you, I have a tea cloth from when I was a first grader, and the tea cloth was an assignment where it was kind of like we do this fundraiser at my school called Square One, where you send in child images and they're produced to create products that are buyable by the parents. And we made self-portraits, and the school would make a school-wide tea cloth, everybody's portrait, for everyone to buy. And I must have annoyed the heck out of my art teacher because my drawing is the worst. You can tell that the directive is draw a picture of yourself. I added a flower pot, a window, a table, all of this complicated stuff that does not produce well on a tiny tea cloth. I just find it interesting looking back on my own personal artwork that I created those spatial cues. It's just interesting to see kids do that. And that's a big part of the pre-schematic, is them trying to better grasp space in relation to their art. Now, as we jump to the schematic age, which typically begins around 7 and extends through 9, this is when children have developed that specific schema or symbols for people and objects in their environment, and they will begin to draw them over and over. So when I say that, I mean things like body parts. That's something that's consistently in their life, and they're going to be more aware of arms and legs. They won't be stick-like anymore. They're having awareness of what their body is capable of, so they're going to make their drawings representative of that. In fact, they've noted that in many schematic stage drawings, adults have these abnormally long legs because that's how kids see them.
Wow.
As you asked about the blue strip in the sky, that tends to start erasing at this point. Houses are no longer floating off the page, nor are people. They're starting to ground things with a baseline or a horizon line, and they're starting to show things like topography, like images of plant life and trees. The biggest thing that I have noticed working with elementary age students, and I hate to put this way, but especially little boys that I've worked with the current big obsession with graphic novels like Captain Underpants.
I love Captain Underpants!
Yes, yes. It's a little crude, but it's the best books because it teaches them a very simple drawing style. And it's about two little boys creating their own comic. It's great. But children are starting to understand not just spatial awareness, but time awareness, like sequences over time. So they're going to start telling stories with their drawings, and they might start to do cartooning. And boy, I actually have a big book tacked up in my office at work, which is called, let's call him Steven. And it's Steven's Butter Day. And it's this comic that this child based entirely off of the styles of Captain Underpants. I'll take a picture of it and I'll send it to you for this. We can share it on our social media with this episode. And it's all about him having it was so well written and well drawn. This day where he had to fight a butter based villain and had butter in his breakfast and things like that. And it was super cute. And the fact that he developed a whole cartoon by himself is really interesting, you know? And I think he was 6, 7 when he did it. He's almost 8 now.
That's so fun.
The last stage I'm going to talk about, because this is pushing out of the realm of early childhood education, is the realistic or the gang stage, also known as the dawning realism. There's a lot of different terms for this, but basically the point of this being is this is the stage where you are developing detail in your drawings and you're determining perspective. So depth or distance in your drawings. You're now understanding shadows, shading, form. You're showing varying expressions in your characters. And colors are being used to more accurately depict the environment, as well as you're introducing more complex art materials. The gang stage is more, again, I like the term the dawning realism to describe the stage. But I think that the term gang stage is interesting too, because it describes two parts. The first being that you are learning how to gang together your images, you're actually prospectively putting them on the same plane. But the more accurate reason why we use the term gang stage is the aspect of peer acceptance. This is the stage where you are more eager to conform to your peers and you're sensitive to your peers.
Interesting. So like the older children in the oldest group at the school, when all of them were drawing wolves.
Oh my gosh.
And they were all drawing their wolf characters. Yeah.
They love that.
And that was like the primary thing that they would draw and spend time on when they weren't working on schoolwork or a specific activity was them all doing wolves.
Right. And the definition of a gang that's not related to the criminal activity is a group of people that work in coordination. So if you consider that you're grouping your images in coordination or you're aiming to have your images approved by a group or a gang, it's really interesting.
Yeah.
And so that's the last stage in early childhood education. And again, you guys can look into the other stages of drawing, which are pseudo-realism and the period of decision/crisis on your own time. But that's where we're ending off because that really does end our developmental steps where children are learning how to define their art using clear markings. So what I wanted to get into is how can we kind of touched on this a little bit earlier in regards to how to interpret scribbles. How can you get your young child to start these line-based drawings that are more definitive? And simple word prompts are a really good way to ignite that imagination. So children are starting to consider their drawings in relation to themselves, not just as a mark on a paper. And I actually, I'm going to jump a little bit down to talk about how we can relate the subject that is the power of the line and drawing to other subjects in our lives, which beyond some of the base points of linear work, such as geometric and mathematic parts of education, which is way too old for early ed, we can talk about directional capabilities of line work with our young children. I cite it very often with a lot of the art projects that I give 2 to 3 year olds that I will use directional language as a main part of the art. So, you know, can you put the brush up and down? Can you go in a circle? Can you move your hand left to right? Left to right's a little older, but still side to side, over and around, up and under. It's a great way to not only introduce your children into the line part of their art, but also to open a more varied dialogue of directional language that will prevent them from being upset when they are trying to express directional problems in the future. And they're more likely to be more communicative of problems if they have better directional abilities. So instead of a child going, you know, I'm missing this. I see this thing that I want. I can't get it. But they're going, can't get it. So they could say up, up. They could point. They could direct. They could give you an idea of what they're talking about. Line work is a great way to introduce these words because it's draw up and down, draw side to side. I just did grid work with a 3-year-old's class and it was hard at first, but when they got into it, it was very satisfying to see how they could achieve those lines by using words like up, down, side to side, left, right, across, across. It's very interesting.
Yeah.
And then I was thinking of you, Lucy, when I added this part, we can also think of it physically. Include line work in your physical activities because while terms like zigzag and side to side might seem typical to us as adults and might seem typical that children should know these, a lot of young kids will not know terms like zigzag, side to side, up, down. You can use that in your physical verbiage. You know, like, can you walk a straight line? Can you run in a zigzag? Can you sidestep? Can you move like a crab left to right? We can really include line work in physical activity.
Yeah, I was going to say this, and then I saw that actually you have Waldorf education down there. But I was going to talk about how, like, that's something I love about Waldorf curriculum is that they, not that Waldorf really has like a curriculum, right, but I guess their pedagogy is that they start every day with movement. They generally do like dances to begin their day. And I just think that's a great way to start it by connecting to your body and then being able to learn because we like to think of it as two separate things, but they're really not at all.
Very hand in hand. Yeah, that Waldorf part that you just mentioned, there is a popular exercise in the Waldorf educational system Literally, it's in their educational curriculum, is mm-hmm. what they call line formatting. I've included a link that we will add to the notes on this podcast. It's a really good exercise. I've actually tried it with a few children. It's called the Waldorf form drawing, and it is quite simply, we would probably call it a geometric swirl as adults, because I'm going to try to describe this as simply as I can. It's you make a line across. Before you get to the end of the paper, you go down. Before you get to the end of the paper, you go left. You keep going over and over, never letting the lines meet the edge of the paper or another line, until you make a perfect geometric swirl going into the middle of your paper. And you can try this with younger kids, because it is a really good way of encouraging them to make a very formatted line. And they actually have it in their Waldorf curriculum, in the Waldorf curriculum, that they will introduce this drawing format into geometry to try to encourage like early geometric processing.
That's cool. Ah. I love Waldorf. If I could work at any school, I would work at a Waldorf school, but there are not enough in the United States.
They're severely lacking. Well, but so they have this great quote in the Waldorf curriculum that says, straight lines and curves are the starting points for form drawing. This begins with the discovery that the line is a path along which one can move. Children should experience the characteristic difference between straight lines and curves through drawing them. And after having explored their character through whole bodily movement in space. It's a little confounded, but essentially what it's trying to say is what exactly I just said beforehand about consider line work in your physical activities too. The child should think of themselves as part of the line when they're drawing. They should have a large enough surface when they're creating their line work that they are using their full arm movement to create these great full body lines. And they're straight cool. lines, curved lines. I was going to make a small personal story about how I applied for many an art school when I was leaving high school. And there was a design-based school, so industrial design specifically, the design of airplanes and computer mechanisms. I was not in that purview. And I remember going on a tour of this school, and I knew that I could never go to the school because they said that one of their exams at the end of the first year, and this is the SCAD, Savannah College of Art and Design, this is their industrial design program, one of the best in the country, you have to be able to draw a perfectly straight line from one point to another with no help, just straight line all the way down, because it is such an indicator of, I mean so many things. It's an indicator of your balance, your carefulness. I mean, that's adult art education. That's a whole other subject, but still, I thought that was really interesting. So the line matters.
That is so interesting.
So, contrary to popular belief, coloring in the lines isn't all that bad, especially depending on what you're coloring in. Montessori has a lot of ideas on this subject, but I found a good blog piece on a blog called Montessori for Everybody that pointed out that it's not just about having your child draw their own lines and design their own pictures. It's also, you can encourage your child to respect the black line by having them color in coloring pages, but maybe just don't do the bland coloring pages, such as Frozen coloring page that you got for a dollar. Try to do something that's a little more engaging and is more advanced in the imagery. So it's actual visual education, like a map or an anatomical diagram.
They highly recommend
it. It's really interesting. And I was reading more too about how Montessori has this practice engage in. Let me pull this up real quick.
Wow, you're pulling it up, because I just, again, a good thing about learning new things, but because I tend to be very anti-coloring pages, because it's so product-based, not process, you know? But that is a really good thing to think about.
I can genuinely think of the one time I have used coloring pages in a recent art activity. And it was when we made a bird bath, Lucy, and I gave the children hyper-realistic images of birds of Virginia so that they had that direct connection and then would try to go for correct colors. And that was one of the most recent examples. But Montessori has a style, when I'm reading this right now, because I was kind of going, at this. They present children with engaging images of animals or trees or other simple yet accurate image work, and they would have the kids trace those images to copy those that line work. And I was like, okay, I don't know how I feel about that, but I think it's a really interesting process. And it does speak to the idea of the bold line.
Well, and I think, especially if they're in the right developmental age span, I think if you're doing that with like the 3-year-old, you're setting them up for failure. And that's not what we want to do with art. But if you're doing that with older children, that really could be a good practice on very specific fine motor skills and control, really honing those. And even, you know, something that anyone who is interested in art has done is you do a lot of copying other people's artworks, like at least their styles, picking it up, watching videos on how do I make this fire look the way that I want to make it, you know, a lot of kind of copying and hone your skill. Yeah.
Right. Right. Like I harp on this all the time, but like that's exactly how I learned how to draw, was I would copy images from books. But again, I'm a little bitter about tracing in some instances, but he designed his own prints. That's how Andy Warhol made his famous soup can in Marilyn Monroe prints. He would take photographs that he had taken and he would trace those images over and over and create multiple prints. And that is a nice way to introduce line work and thoughtful ideas of pop culture art with young children. You might remember this, and any listener who knows Donna of our school, there is a massive painting of our lunch lady, Miss Donna.
I love that painting.
We had the kids do an Andy Warhol week and they projected her image onto a wall. And the older kids traced her details and the younger kids used oil pastels to color in all the different parts of her. So yeah, I was going to talk about, just to finish this all up, books to introduce the line to your child. One of which you mentioned, it's one of my all-time favorites, and Harold and the Purple Crayon, which we all know is about a little boy who has a wild imagination and designs a whole world with one crayon. That's a dark color. And he just uses a line to create two-dimensional imagery that is his own, his whole world. And there's even a great part in the book where he draws a road and the road goes on forever because that's the dimension that he drew it in, was going out forever. At the age of 3, Harold should not have been able to draw a dimensional perspective imagery like that, but yet he was able to. Seems pretty suspect to me.
Do we know Harold's age?
He's wearing a onesie.
He's a 9-year-old wearing a onesie.
How old is Harold in the Purple Crayon? He's 4.
Oh, yep.
Harold, well, according to...
Maybe he got some help on that. He's a very advanced.
Harold, according to the stages of drawing, you should not be capable of a perspective line drawing. That seems pretty...
Not for many years.
So this is the episode where we cancel the book Harold and the Purple Crayon, because it just sends unrealistic expectations to our children that they should be able to draw perspective drawings at the age of 4. This is not realistic, folks. We'll draw our own version of Harold. This is Harold. Harold can only make pre-schematic images. Harold tried to draw a line. It didn't go very well. The end.
The name Harold is sounding more and more awesome to me. Going to have Leonard and a Harold.
So Harold and the Purple Crayon is a great book to encourage a child to think creatively about how they can use their utensil to create an everlasting line. I have 2 other books that have the same concept. One is called Lines That Wiggle, and the synopsis of the book is, follow the line that runs through the picture book and turns itself into all kinds of things. The waves above an octopus, the veins in a leaf, the wrappings curling around a mummy, and the trapping threads of a spider web. So that one is a fun, it has like a monster evolved in it. It's fun illustrations. It's cute. Really good for ages 2 and up. I love that book. My most engaging book, however, and I really want to talk about this artist and do a little highlight shout out, I'm probably going to post a bit about her on my personal Instagram, is Paola Bassio, who is an Italian illustrator. And she has created a book quite simply called The Line, which has a very similar concept to the last 2 books. It's utilizing a line and exploring the different images you can make with a line. I personally enjoy her book and her art on a deeper level because her style is what I aim for in my personal art. It's distinctive lineage with watercolor to fill in and watercolor ink and colored pencil to fill in the imagery. And I've included two images from Lucy to view, one of which is a more colorful, enigmatic image of a cat seeing imaginary items in the household. And the other one is a picture of a mother and a daughter laying in a flower field. And it's these distinctive black lines.
I can't even see the daughter there. If I ever have a daughter, I'm going to put it on my wall.
It's a beautiful picture. It's so simple. She's utilized only three colors, red, black, and red.
Actually, I want to anyways. I want this hanging on my wall.
I love images like this. She has utilized these bright, distinctive black lines, and she's used the slightest bits of color to fill them in and the slightest bits of shading. And it's a beautiful image. So again, Paola Bossio, Italian illustrator. It's PAULABOSSIO. She'll be linked in this episode. Oh my gosh, she's so much fun. And I like her art. It's exactly the style that I personally would like to aim for. And she has made so many fun books, but the most distinctive of which is The Line. And she has another book that goes with The Line called The Pencil. So she's a fun one. The last one I wanted to address, because Ish, I wanted to leave in its own little category of a book that people should consider picking up to address line work with their students. Ish is a book that is not exactly about lines. It's about enjoying images that you make and embracing how different your drawings can be. And so in Ish, just to give a quick synopsis, there is a little boy and he is an illustrator and he makes drawings all the time. And they are the drawings expressed in the book are so cute. It's these fun, it's like a flower, but the flower is only made with lines. Or it's a car, but the car is only made with lines. So it's a great example of line work. But it also, it talks about how his older brother discourages his art and tells him that his art looks very not like what it should look, is what his brother keeps saying. So he says, that's not a car. It looks like a car, but it's not a car. And the boy gets very discouraged. He starts drawing, or he will draw and he'll throw his drawing away. He comes to discover that his little sister has been collecting his drawings and displaying them in a beautiful manner in her room. And she coins this term for him to consider his art, which is ish. It's not a car, it's car-ish. It's not a flower, it's flower-ish. So he starts to think of his art as not wrong, but different. And it's just a really good way to help children when they're frustrated as they enter that pre-schematic age, because I've seen this many times. Kids start to understand what they want to make, but they do not like sometimes how it is producing on paper. And so this is a good way to help kids come to terms with the fact that they are learning and that their style can be in of itself its own thing. It doesn't need to look the way it's supposed to look, quote unquote.
I love that. Oh.
But yeah, the black line can be used wherever, whenever we need it. And adults should be using it. Kids should be using it. Power of black line should not be underestimated.
Thank you so much for listening to The Speckled Bees, a celebration of childhood. We really hope you enjoyed listening. If you are enjoying this, please share with your friends and your family and help us grow our community of passionate adults who work with children.
We love that you have taken this time today to listen to our ramblings, insights, and interests on this subject. I love this talk with Lucy. Lucy, I love talking with you. And I hope that you guys love listening to us. So until next time, this is the Speckled Bees buzzing on out. Why do you laugh at me every time? 1 requirement though, I have one requirement for you because I want someone to get this. Get a brown cat. Have you ever seen a brown cat in real life? They're extremely rare, but like,
I don't know that I have.
They're really rare. And if you just do me this favor, if you ever happen upon the chance to get a cat, please seek out a brown one just so I can see one in real life.
Okay, I'll try.